Merkle Media.
Flashback Fridays on Macroaggressions. We're going back to August 9th, 2020, episode number 46, The Dark Secrets of Hollywood with Isaac Weishaupt. If you're looking to convert some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency or maybe even your retirement accounts into tangible assets like gold and silver, you can go to our website, www.macroaggressions.gold. That'll take you to Tony Arterburn over at Wise Wolf, and he'll hook you right up. Now enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. Thanks if you're watching us on Iconic or listening wherever podcasts are served. We certainly do appreciate it. There's a lot of options out there, and the fact that you're checking us out is pretty cool. And we couldn't do it without the help of our sponsors. Chemical Free Body is a sponsor of ours. We've had Tim James on the show. He's fantastic. He was able to save his life by changing his health, the way he eats, and taking a deep dive into nutrition. So it's been really important for him. He came on, explained how it all worked. And his show is a supporter and a sponsor of ours, his company. And he has a podcast as well. So if you're looking for natural supplements, everything that they sell at Chemical Free Body is certified organic. It's plant-based. It's gluten-free, GMO-free, soy-free, dairy-free. The only thing that isn't free is the price, but they've got a discount for us. If you use the promo code MACRO, you will get a discount off of your whole order, which could include products, but it could also be coaching and classes. He has a podcast you can follow as well. So take a look, check it out. Free shipping on any orders in the United States over $99. They also ship internationally as well. And he has a ridiculous double your money back guarantee. Now, I would assume that you don't offer that if you're selling products that are garbage. So I think that that's probably a good indicator that what he is selling, he strongly believes in. He's willing to put his money behind that. So check out Chemical Free Body. Use the promo code MACRO to support his company, and any support for him also helps to support our show as well. And of course, we need it and appreciate it. And it helps us get into the real stuff. And these days, we've been watching a lot of Hollywood. We've been seeing the mainstream media has takes on everything. And Hollywood has definitely infected our American culture, really the culture of the world. And on the surface, it's movies, it's television, it's commercials, it's all this stuff, pretty people selling things you don't need or acting like other people in movies and doing these great things. And we love it. We love Hollywood. We love all of that. We love the fantasy. We love the stories. We're into it. But there is a darker side to Hollywood, one that we maybe don't want to acknowledge because it clouds the way we view the rest of their products. But if we're being intellectually honest about fighting for a better world, exposing Hollywood and looking into the aspects of that is something that we have to do, even if we wind up finding that we don't like what we see and it stains the way we view the industry of Hollywood. So there's nobody better to bring on to talk about that than Isaac Weishaupt. Hello, what's cooking? Let's get deep into this madness of Hollywood. This is you do a lot of things, but this is pretty much your specialty, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, I sort of have a weird fascination with the dark arts and pop culture and how they all sort of tie together. And like you said, you know, Hollywood's kind of the epicenter, and we have to understand from a global perspective, Hollywood runs the show. I mean, you've got Bollywood, that's such a distant second place. Hollywood and the celebrities of America, we kind of, you know, set the tone for the entire world. Everyone looks to celebrities in Hollywood for movies and celebrity news and all that stuff. And I joke about my podcast being the TMZ Illuminati show because half the time I end up talking celebrity gossip about, you know, because, and I only pick out the celebrity gossip that pertains to relevant topics. But to be more precise about it, you know, the Hollywood and most of your viewers, I don't know the level of wokeness, which I'm sure they're fairly woke. They probably know this already. But the Hollywood, of course, references the magic wands created from the tree of the holly. And when they talk about the magic of Hollywood, that's quite literal, I believe. I believe that through revelation of the method, through many occultists literature such as Helena Blavatsky and Alice Bailey and Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons and all these people, they've flat out told us how the game works. They flat out told us that occult ritual magic and mental emanations from these magicians are causing real changes in the world. And when you look at where quantum physics is getting there's a focus, right? So you've got the classical Newtonian mechanical physics, mm-hmm. and then you've got this physics on the subatomic level of quantum physics, and they can't seem to find the laws that agree with both realities. Mm-hmm. And what they're looking at here is you've got the macro and the micro. The micro, of course, being at the quantum level, and then the macro being the Newtonian planetary motions, that kind of stuff. And what they're trying to do is blend these two and find the laws that exist, because they violate each other mm-hmm. for different reasons that are probably too smart for me to get into. But the string theory is kind of the idea of how they can connect the two. So what I'm getting at here is that they're is coming a scientific basis to support these occult ideas of ritual magic, of creating reality through sheer will, which is what all of these occultists, for as long as we can tell, have been talking about. And, you know, Walt Disney himself was a Rosicrucian. He was in the ancient mystical order of the Rosy Cross. He was also a member of the Order of the De Molay, which is referring to the last Grand Master of the Knights Templar, which all the listeners understand the Knights Templar's role in the secret societies and how they were worshiping Baphomet and blowing each other for ritualistic purposes and all this crazy stuff.
Had to have been a free, I would assume Walt Disney had to have been a high-ranking Freemason as well.
Yeah, we could assume as such, but I've never been able to confirm that. I'm sure maybe someone who dug deeper may have, but I've never been able to confirm that. He, of course, had the infamous secret meeting club inside of Disneyland called Club 33.
That's why I mentioned that. Yeah, if you go into the Pirates of the Caribbean, if you go dig around in that that area of Disney, you'll see it. There's just a little sign. It just says 33. But if you're not looking for it, you would think you'd walk by like a broom closet or something like that.
Oh, really? Have you seen it? Have you been out there?
I've seen it. I have.
Oh, no way. Yeah. I haven't been to Disneyland ever. It's funny. I talk about this on my show, but I grew up not watching Disney at all. Like we didn't do it. And, you know, my dad kind of ruled the entertainment that we watched. So I watched a lot of like horror movies growing up, you know, probably younger than I should have. And the first time I saw Disney anything was I saw Alice in Wonderland as a child. My babysitters came over and they put the VHS tape in, and like it blew my mind. I was like, "What is this?" You know, and I never, I didn't pay Disney any mind as a kid. That never influenced me, and even to this day, like I've never seen The Lion King. I saw the Aladdin a few years ago, but like I don't know much about Disney, to be honest. And yeah. I went to Disney World. I was in the military and I was stationed down in Florida. And this was after 9/11. They would allow active duty military to go to Disney World for free with their families. It's like me and my family, we all went down to Orlando and it was really cool. And like I said, I don't know anything about Disney, but I was like, dude, this is crazy, man. This place is nuts.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I remember Epcot Center blowing my mind. And what I'm getting at here is I always wanted to go to Disneyland, but I haven't been out there yet, but I definitely want to check out this 33. So I'm glad you said it's in the Pirates of the Caribbean thing.
Yeah. You gotta go kind of wander around and there are no signs to it. You know, I mean, nobody's directing you there. And Disney, Hollywood and Disney had ties to, you know, the beginning of Hollywood. And then one of the things that we find that there's this Venn diagram of overlapping people that you start to see in a variety of places, like Aleister Crowley, as you mentioned. He was involved with Jack Parsons and these guys that started, the Suicide Club, which was the precursor to NASA and to Jet Propulsion Laboratory with Jack Parsons and these guys putting this all together. And this is all happening for people that don't know geographically where JPL is and parts of NASA, it's Pasadena. So Pasadena is, you know, maybe 45 minutes to an hour north of Anaheim, where Disney is located, where Disneyland is located. Disney Studios, though, is in Burbank, which is geographically very close to Pasadena. So all these people were in the Southern California area back in the early, you know, back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And when you dig into a lot of the connections, you find that there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of people that were, you know, involved with Disney and involved with Hollywood in general that also sort of dabbled with this Aleister Crowley. I mean, in fact, we even see it in music for people like if you want to get into a little bit more of semi more modern. Just look at the Red Hot Chili Peppers album, Blood, Sugar, Sex, Magic. I mean, they're talking about some of these things that go on in Hollywood through their, you know, through their alliances with guys like Rick Rubin and, you know, Lior Cohen and these scumbags that are, you know, hardcore Israel first guys that sort of shape a lot of this landscape of music. So it's on the surface, Hollywood, the music industry, you know, it's like candy for the masses. But like anything, you eat too much candy, you start to get sick. If you dig a little bit deeper into what these guys are really involved in, Hollywood is kind of a sick place. I lived in Southern California I grew up in Southern California. I lived in the LA area for over 20 years. So didn't work in Hollywood, but, you know, have friends. Everything is kind of shaped by that when you're living in LA. I mean, Hollywood is, you know, the main draw for everything. All the businesses kind of revolve around, you know, orbit it in some way or another. So it's a fascinating place where people go to have their, you know, to have their dreams come true. But what we've been learning over the last especially couple years is that in Hollywood, a lot of these dreams are really nightmares and the people behind them are some devious people. So starting there in the 60s or with these guys, I mean, where did they take this? What was their plan? Did they have a dark plan or is this something that just sort of accidentally evolved?
They've been plotting and planning for this. And I believe that through secret societies, through these mystical orders, through these occult, ritualistic organizations, they've had an end game And it sort of involves various factors. It involves this endgame of these elites becoming gods and man becoming God, the apotheosis, the deification of man. And they sell it as if we're all going on this journey with them. And that's not the case, according to how I believe. Right.
Right.
Aleister Crowley talked about this in Liber 77. He said there's no God but man, and that the slave shall serve. In his book Magic and Theory and Practice, he said the whole planet must be bathed in blood before man is ready to accept the law of Thelema. The great war must be fought. Much like the elitist of our entire history, they believe in a master-slave relationship, which is evident. I mean, we live in a democracy, but like, it's clear that the middle class is being squeezed into oblivion by the greed of these elite folks. And then, by the way, you know, Bill Gates is over here like talking like, oh, we're just here helping out everybody. Like, dude, you've been funneling money into your pocket for like, you're the richest man in the world. Like, are we supposed to believe that you really care about the common man and woman? Like, it's such nonsense. But, but you were talking earlier, I took some notes down because I wanted to hit on just a couple ideas you were talking about. But to answer your question, yeah, this has been in the works since day one. They've always been working towards it. America is the Secret Destiny of America was a book written about this whole idea that this is the great experiment of pushing the great work. And of course, America turned out to be the place where all the entertainment came from, because entertainment is influential on both the conscious and subconscious level. Francis Bacon talked about this. He talked about how it's better to teach lessons through entertainment versus direct lecture, because people they tune out during a lecture, but you could sit there and watch a movie for 2 hours easy. Or if you're into these superhero nonsense movies, 3-4 hours or whatever they are, you know, I pick on the superhero nerds all the time. But
that's okay.
but you talked about let's follow up here, because there were some things you were talking about. I want to make a point of, so Disney, because I'm writing a book on aliens, okay? And Disney, the 1953 Robertson panel basically was this study of how can we talk about UFOs to the public. And back then, the whole deal was we have to tell the people that they're not real. They don't exist. Mm-hmm. And part of the plan from the Robertson panel was to get different entertainment companies to convince us, including Disney. Disney was specifically called out back in 53. And you recall Disney was teaming up with Nazi Wernher von Braun and pushing all this moon nonsense. I don't think we really went and put a man on the moon. I think we did a lot of stuff to try to get there. And I think that ultimately we just put on a show to pretend that man walked on the moon.
I feel the same way. Yeah. I've done stuff about that before and put it in my first book. I mean, I like to think we went, it sounds great as a human being, as an American, as all those things. It all sounds great, but I just have to, if I'm objective and look at the evidence, I mean, there's no evidence that shows that we did. As much as I would like to believe we went, I came to the same conclusion you did, which is it was a bunch of theater put on by a bunch of people that don't have a problem lying to other people. So
Because to these, it's a mindset these people have. It's the ends always justify the means to these people, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why they've consolidated media, and now, you know, damn near all media, 90% of media is controlled by six corporations, six companies. One of them is Disney, right? Mm-hmm. And to this day, so Disney's had an edge since the beginning, right? Now they own A&E, which owns History Channel, which you can see how the History Channel is sort of our source of disclosure all of a sudden. They've got all these shows, you know, The Ancient Aliens, Blue Book, Unidentified, Skinwalker Ranch, Unexplained. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, right? Yeah. I know I'm glossing over a giant question talking about aliens. And we can come back to that if you want, but let's, I do want to talk, you talked about the Suicide Squad, which was the part of the predecessors to NASA. So Jack Parsons out in Pasadena there, when he wasn't having sex with L. Ron Hubbard in the desert to channel aliens into our world, he was part of what they called the Suicide Squad, and one of his coworkers, I want to say it was six people, I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people in that group was Frank Molina.
Yes.
And Frank Molina is, you know, his son is married to Ghislaine Maxwell's sister,
Christine Maxwell. Yeah. What a coincidence. That's
right. Yeah. And Christine Maxwell is in on the, you know, search engines of the internet, which is all, you know, because there's components to this agenda, and one of them is data mining.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting inside the heads.
Yeah, two sisters. There's Isabel Maxwell, who is in charge of the World Economic Forum's Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is focusing on brain implants and AI. And then there's Christine Maxwell, who runs a company called Chiliad, which is a data mining service that the FBI's counterterrorism unit used to dig into all of the terrorist information that they have, which is probably the worst company you could put in charge of it, because Christine Maxwell's dad was Robert Maxwell, who was a spy for Israel, among others. And so, yeah, let's take the daughter of one of the most well-known spies and put her company in charge of the FBI's counterterrorism information data warehouse. What could possibly go wrong there, right?
It's so crazy, man. What is your take on? I'll tell you my take first, and I'll let you go.
Sure.
This is just a curious question I have for a lot of people. And I obviously respect your work. Since I had you
Likewise.
On my show. But so with Epstein, I used to kind of think like, oh, they killed the guy, you know, clearly they murdered him, and because he knew too much. But now I'm more on the team of like, this dude's alive and he's on an island somewhere.
Yeah.
And I support that, because he had all this video footage of all these people that came into his house to, you know, doing the underage girls and all that stuff. And surely a guy that's this seedy had a dead man switch enabled.
Sure.
And when he went in prison, he probably was like, hey, you guys, you know, made some calls. I need to get out of here. Otherwise, I'm going to drop this video and the whole world's going to see whoever doing whatever. So I'm firmly in that camp, which makes me curious about Ghislaine Maxwell. Does that sort of benefit? Will that apply to her, or are they going to take her out, or is she going to be part of this plan to sort of tell us that, oh, things weren't as bad as everyone said, and no one's doing all these crazy things?
Yeah.
What's your take on all that?
I'm in the Epstein was murdered camp, but I'm only in there about 70%, I would say. And the 30% is that maybe he was swapped out. Now, I acknowledge that the idea of swapping out Maxwell, or swapping out Epstein, or swapping out anybody out of a prison situation like that would require a massive effort. It would be almost impossible to do. But there is one person that had the connections to make that happen, and that is Jeffrey Epstein. So I initially thought, there's no way he's dead. They, you know, they faked it, took him out the back door, and put him on an island somewhere, you know. But when I changed my mind was a conversation I had with Sean Atwood about this, and he was talking to me about, he's a guy, a British guy who did 7 years in Arizona prison for ecstasy distribution. Now he's written a bunch of books, including American Made, and he's written about all these crime families and doing a tremendous amount of work on the Epstein case. And what he was saying was, he also wrote a book for a guy in prison that was a mafia, like a big, like a legit guy who was doing 200 years in prison, like a mafia boss. And from his interaction with him, what he said was that he thinks that Epstein was murdered. And the reason is that if he was to be removed from that situation, if he got caught by the feds and was potentially talking and then was removed from that situation, given a new life, plastic surgery, relocated, a new identity, all that whole thing, it would send the wrong message to everybody else in that organization that if you get caught and if you get start talking to the feds, it's okay because we'll pluck you out and we'll remove you. And that is the wrong message that this organization would want to send. The only message they would want to send is if you get caught and if you talk, you are dead. And so he believes that it is more realistic that he was murdered than rescued based on the philosophy and overall message that that organization would want to send. Now, he also acknowledges that it is possible that he could have been slipped out the back door, because if anyone could do it, it would be the guy that has all this dirt on all these powerful people. So, so it's a mystery. So like I said, I'm 70. He swapped me from 70-30 in favor of Epstein escape to me thinking that he actually got murdered based on that conversation.
But with
Ghislaine Maxwell now being in custody, I mean, I would imagine the same applies, right? That she would have access to the information. In fact, if we were to do an organizational chart on these people, I'd put Ghislaine Maxwell one notch ahead of Epstein because of her family ties. I think she was really sort of the head of the operation. He was the conscience-free psychopath who with a massive sex addiction, which by some account, some people have claimed that they think that he was MK Ultra because of his hypersexuality and his behavior. And he wasn't, by all accounts, Epstein was not a very bright guy. He was sort of a low level guy, not a deep thinker, not the guy that would maybe craft this whole thing, but they don't feel that way about Ghislaine Maxwell. They feel like she had more of a, she comes from an intelligence family that were spies for the UK and for Israel and also for the Russians as well. So she would know how to organize this. The whole thing is a bit of a mystery. Once you start to dig into her family, has connections to Roger Molina, who's one of the co-founders of the Suicide Squad and involved in NASA and the United Nations and everything. I mean, you're like, okay, these people, this is not accidental. These people all have, they're all like one degree of separation away from each other. So it didn't surprise me to see Epstein's relationship with politicians. What did surprise me was to see how deep he was into the scientists and what they were planning there. But I think that actually the science in some strange way goes along and fits nicely with Hollywood, because there's a lot of science behind that, and they're using, technical methods to keep people engaged and entertained. And so I think, and Harvey, by the way, Harvey Weinstein was at one point business partners with Jeffrey Epstein. So it could be that the they were all part of a group back in the late 90s, early 2000s. So it wasn't an accidental relationship. I think that there's a lot of overlap between what Epstein was doing and sort of the relationship Harvey Weinstein had in Hollywood, but that's yet to be determined.
Interesting.
Yeah. So continue now. So let's keep going on. Go ahead.
So, and another quick point, you mentioned the Red Hot Chili Peppers, the Blood Sugar Sex Magik album. On the back of that CD, they had the artwork, and it has the tattoo, Anthony Kiedis's tattoo on his wrist, which is the 8-pointed star, which is the sigil for chaos magic, which when you dig into Hollywood and all this idea of ritual magic being transmitted through entertainment, you get into this concept of chaos magic and this idea of you can create a sigil out of anything. For instance, if you were trying to, let's say you were trying to be more heroic or brave or something, you would create a sigil out of, Captain America or something like that. And you would focus your energies on this, and you would be able to somehow harness these same qualities that the target there has, which sounds a little nutty, but that's the way things work to these people. And I'm not here to say it doesn't work. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
clearly they
matter.
This.
They think it works. Matter.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we can be dismissive of these things and go, get out of here with that nonsense. I don't know. They're not doing any of that. But it's like, hey, listen, it's not high on my list of things that matter. But to them, it appears to be, I don't know if you've heard these, I'm sure you have heard these rumors. I mean, David Crosby actually sort of came out and confirmed it as well, that every record agency, every big time record agency has its own altar somewhere hidden where they take the master recording of the music and put it on the altar and send it off, you know, send good vibrations its way so that it'll be a hit. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I've heard about it. I can't remember his name. There's people out there listening that are screaming at their device right now. I want to say John Lehrer, but it's not John Lehrer. There was a guy who said he was in this sort of
Todd.
Of witches.
Todd. John Todd.
That's it. Yes. And he had said that. And it's it's funny. Years ago, when I started this journey back in 2011, I was extremely rational. And back right around, you know, the early years there of my sort of red pilling, I read about that. And then I read some like sort of debunking of that, saying like, okay, oh, well, this guy was making a bunch of stuff up. And I bought right into it. And I hadn't really thought about it till you just said it just now.
Yeah.
And it's definitely worth a relook, because all the things that I think the truther community people are nuts and they're making things up and they're looking too deep, eventually it comes true. And I find myself having to, you know, apologize almost and do my apology tour of like, well, I was wrong. Turns out Tom Hanks is a pedophile. And, you know, right. And I'm just like, this, our world is so wacky right now. But yeah, I mean, is that possible? Yeah. I mean, I guess so. You look at all these celebrities that go insane and do sort of like demonic things or have devilish lyrics in the music. And it's clear that something draws them into this. And I talked about in my book, The Dark Path, I went into this idea of looking at, you look at the work of Carl Jung or Kenneth Grant, who is a guy that Aleister Crowley taught all of the works of Thelema. And they all overlap with this idea that there is a source of artistic creativity, and one must get their mind prepared to make contact with this source. And on top of that, oh, by the way, this source is where demonic forces reside.
Great.
And like,
I want to have a great album. I got to get in touch with the source, but yes, the source is kind of the devil.
Essentially. And that's what explains why, because one thing that always confused me researching this, like, for instance, you got all these satanic panic hair bands, Ozzy Osbourne and all this stuff from the 70s and 80s. And they all had like lyrics about the devil and worshiping the devil. And there was all these claims about them. But I was always confused because they seemed to buy into that sort of shtick and they'd wear all black. But then they always wore an upright cross. And I was always confused about that. And I thought, if you were really a devil worshiper, you would wear the inverted cross or whatever. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, let's not get into how the inverted cross is the cross of Peter or whatever. Like, I'm just saying, traditionally, Satanists invert everything. And then I read somewhere years ago, I don't remember where, that the reason they do that is because they do, in fact, make contact with these demonic forces and do some kind of level of Satan worship. And they do it as a protection. They know this is dangerous. They know that they're messing with the devil in order to harness this artistic ability. And they chant, you can hear their right out of their own mouth, they channel the lyrics from this other place, from the demons sometimes. So they do this because they acknowledge that there is a good and evil in this world and that they have to protect themselves. If they're going to dabble with the darkness, it's going to bite them in the ass. So they got to be careful. The what was I saying before I got off on Ozzy Osbourne? I started thinking about Ozzy Osbourne and got confused.
You were talking about the guy that was taught all of the Lima.
Oh yeah, Kenneth Grant. Oh, thank you. Yeah, so Kenneth Grant, right? He talked about the source of artistic impulses comes from the Kabbalistic Tree of Life's dark side, the where the Klepoth is what they call that. And basically it's this idea that when the world was created, there's this, you know, essentially good and evil aspect to it. And the evil side, the dark side of the Tree of Life, is the realm of the damaged gods, is what it's called, which is very similar to what you can read about in the Bible when the Watchers and the fallen angels came and, you know, Lucifer and all that stuff. But that's where specifically Kenneth Grant says these artists should try to channel these inspirations from. And it's right there in the lyrics. It's right there in their own statements. People think they're playing it up to be, you know, clever or seem mysterious, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, because I know this because I was there. I was in that camp of the sheep and the masses that just were like, oh, cool, man. Like, wow, they're really, really dark and dangerous or whatever.
But right.
I think there's something to it. And I don't know what level, clearly, I don't know what level of awareness or involvement they have. I believe that either they come to it organically or they have a meeting with someone and they say, hey, you ever tried doing this sort of thing? Or, you know, do you want to write better music? I got a way I can do that for you. And then maybe this person does a ritual that the artist doesn't even know about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this goes on and on and on. We could talk all day. People keep talking the Faustian bargain, selling their soul to the devil. I think it's all related to the same idea that creativity, powers of the subconscious, archetypes, programming, symbolism, all this stuff feeds into, it's like this system that most people are unaware of. I don't think they might even understand how it works. It just does. And they
right.
do it.
You've got multiple musicians on camera saying that they sold their soul to the devil. Katy Perry is a well-known one that said, you know, I was doing gospel stuff and everything, and then I sold my soul to the devil, you know, kind of like, uh-huh. And then everything took off. You have Bob Dylan on 60 Minutes talking about how he made a deal with the man downstairs, you know, the one who controls it all, you know, and you're like, what are you saying? You made a deal. Basically, he was in a roundabout way saying he made a deal with the devil. So now I'm not a religious person and I'm not a, you know, God, devil, you know, I'm not, that's just not my thing. So I don't know. And I don't know Bob Dylan personally or Katy Perry. So I don't know if they're religious or what their deal is, but it seems that there are a few really, really well-known people in the music industry or in Hollywood or maybe both, that, you know, combination of the two, that have admitted that they sold their soul to the devil. And it's a specific sort of conversation about that, how everything wasn't, you know, nothing was really going right. And then I sold my soul to the devil. And now here we are. And, you know, why do you keep doing it? Why do you keep doing it? Well, because I made a deal. You know, Bob Dylan was like, well, you know, I got to keep going because, you know, I made that deal. So is that a real thing? Do you think that's a real thing?
Absolutely. I don't think it appears as in walks the devil with the pitchfork and the horns and here's a book and sign it and we're good. Like, I don't think it appears that way. I think it's they get nudged in a direction, or they maybe talk to the handlers or the people that are on the inside and just acknowledge that they would like to be better artists, or they would subscribe to whatever in order to have this fame. And, you know, I don't think it's as insidious as we would be led to believe. I think that they basically sign a deal verbally, or they get nudged in a direction that these sorts of things happen to them, which is why I think a lot of these artists break down. Is I don't know if they understand that things are being channeled through them on some level.
Yeah.
And they talk about that kind of stuff too, about, you know, Beyonce talks about Sasha Fierce being taking over her while she performs, sort of form of possession.
Yeah.
And then later on she said, oh, she died, I merged both of our personalities together. And these are like, this is heavy duty stuff. And when they say it, they're not joking. They're not laughing. Like Bob Dylan on the 60 Minutes, like, that dude wasn't joking, man. Like, he wasn't like snickering about it. And it's like, well, what the hell are they saying? And it blows my mind. I mean, it shouldn't, but it blows my mind that these journalists don't push them when they say this stuff. They just laugh it off and like,
It's like, so tell us about your new album. No. Let's stick with this. I sold my soul to the devil part. Cause this is kind of interesting, Katie. Elaborate on this, you know, on, like, oh, you know, this is great. You guys are going to do a Super Bowl halftime show this year. That's fantastic. Let me ask you a question, Madonna. Is it going to be as satanic as the last one you were involved in and the one before that and the one where you guys had pentagrams everywhere and where, you know, in the Olympic opening games of the opening ceremonies of the 2012 Olympics and all the satanic imagery there? I mean, if it's not a collective effort to cast a spell on the audience, then it seems like they would incorporate a variety of different themes, but they only go with one theme, and that is a very surface level, looks like a lot of dancing, looks like a lot of singing and interesting sort of visuals. But then once you're inclined or you have at least a cursory understanding of these symbols, if you watch the Super Bowl halftime show, it is a much different performance. You know, these things start to jump out at you. So is that part of Hollywood? You know, you mentioned it involved with the Hollywood and using that to cast spells. We've got major sporting events like the Super Bowl and the Olympics and all of these large World Cup, everything, with having opening ceremonies that are, I mean, at least they are terrifying. At worst, they are full-blown satanic rituals happening right in front of you. Like the Video Music Awards on MTV is unwatchable. They might as well have Satan himself present Best New Performing Artist. I mean, it is that dark. And that can't be accidental, right?
Right. And this ties into sort of that idea of transmitting energies into the subconscious of the masses. They are quite literally programming the world according to their will. It's this common theme you see with occult magic. And that's what the people running the show are doing. They're quite literally transforming the world through entertainment. A lot of people want to pretend entertainment's not that influential, quite the opposite. Now, the opening ceremony, so like obviously the Super Bowl, that's the biggest one. There's more energy focused on that. Well, the Olympics, I guess, would be the biggest. All this energy focused on one thing, focused on the flame, which was created by Hitler, by the way, like that part of the ceremony, because he was into all this pagan god craziness. And the halftime show is probably your second biggest one, where we're all focused on this psychodrama, this ritual, because that's what it is. It's a psychodrama ritual. And the people that are in the know on this, they understand what's going on here. They understand that their spiritual religion is being slowly instilled into the subconscious of the masses. This includes the VMAs and all these award shows, which I've been following since 2011. I don't like those shows just because they're lame to me. It's like this weird celebrity God worship thing that they do. Yeah. And it's very strange to me, but I've watched them all because I always try to see what I could find. Right. And I've noticed in the last couple of years, it's sort of toned down. I think it came up to a peak when Nicki Minaj was in this, I think it was the VMAs, and she was being exercised. And she levitated and it blew my mind because she's the one out here saying she's got like 20 personalities and all these different spirits inside of her body. And Roman Zolansky, which is obviously a ploy on Roman Polanski, the one of the OG pedophiles there, who was involved with the Manson thing. And that's a tangent we could go on for an hour. But I do want to bring up one good point, one good example of a high profile ritual, what they say. Madonna and Quavo from the Migos, they were at this Eurovision show in 2019. They did a song. I can't remember the name of the song. I think it's called Wake Up, but they're on top of a pyramid. Essentially it's
always,
it's above a, inverted destroyed church.
Okay.
It ends with, they're at the top of the pyramid singing, and all the people, the masses, the sheep, they're marching up single file to the top of this pyramid, and then they drop off the end. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're showing symbolically the sacrificial death of the masses. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, this was American Horror Story Apocalypse. This show was out, And they talked about on that show about how the end times, they're going to wipe out the planet and not everyone's going to make it on that show. And they talked about an Illuminati and they talked about, you know, an Antichrist and all this stuff. And then you got this video, this high profile ritual of Madonna and Quavo. And all these people are going up this thing, they're dying. And Madonna and Quavo, they're holding hands. And they say that they're joining the elite in the new world. And this large message says, wake up across it. And they're standing between two pillars, which is the Boaz and Joaquin entrance to the mystical place. Mm-hmm. And they say, and they flat out tell you, you're not invited. They show you that the people are dying and their sacrifices to this new spirituality. They say in the lyrics, not everyone's coming to the future. Not everyone's learning from the past. Not everyone's going to make it. Not everyone's going to last. Open your mind, open your eyes. And then, you know, you fast forward and you've got this COVID thing kicking off and Madonna's losing her damn marbles. She's talking about the fried fish and she's in the bathtub, which is a place where they sacrifice people in the cleansing rituals of witchcraft to the passage of the goddess.
Whitney Houston
and her daughter both died in the bathtub. And I just did a cool thing on my Instagram. Jim Morrison. And I did this video on my Instagram. I think it's still up. I got a notification that they were going to take it down, but they didn't. So at Isaac Weishaupt, everyone can check it out on my Instagram. There's a video of Naya Rivera from Glee. She's that young lady that died. She was 33 years old, which rings all the water. Conspiracy bells. She died in the water. She died in Lake Piru in the Devil's Cove. Okay. Now, previous to that, a few weeks prior, I think it was maybe 2 months prior or so, she had a video on her Instagram of her in the bathtub singing. Previous to that, she was on the show Glee, which I don't watch. Someone in my great community sent me this clip that she was singing about dying young and dying in a river. So I put all this stuff together on this video clip is what I'm trying to say. And then I sort of compiled some other interesting arguments about this bathtub deal. And the next one was Beyonce. Beyonce came out again, another high profile ritual at the Grammys as this goddess Oshun, because she's been doing all this goddess stuff for years. I've been talking about Beyonce. I dislike her music. It's not for me. That's okay.
Right.
I'm a white man. This isn't for me. I'm not saying she's a bad person. I'm just saying it's not my cup of tea, so I don't listen to her. But I do watch all of her stuff. And by the way, on July 31st, her video on Disney Plus, Black is King, which is going to have all this alien type star child symbolism. Anyway, so I put this cool video together, and I got a weird notice because Instagram, of course, run by Facebook, which this censorship thing is off.
They don't like us. They don't appreciate our what we're doing at all.
They don't appreciate it. No, they don't appreciate it, do they? So there's all this weird symbolism, and they reenact these rituals like the bathtub, right? The passage of the goddess ritual, because people are so naive, they discount these ideas and think people are crazy, and that would never happen. But you have to look at our human history. And we've only recently evolved and enlightened ourselves enough to not do these things. We've been worshiping these pagan gods and goddesses and sacrificing babies to Moloch and crazy stuff. I mean,
sacrificing 40,000 people on a long weekend in the Mayan temples where they would march them all up, like you said, march them all up the side of a pyramid and cut them, cut their hearts out and throw them off the end once again.
I'm writing this book on aliens, right? And I'm almost done. I'm writing two books and I'm almost done with the first book. And the first book is laying out this kind of theory and about what the aliens are and why this is happening and why disclosure is happening right now, because it is. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea, and I'm refining it, so I'm hesitant to sort of talk about it right now, but I'm refining it, and it's this idea, and I point to books written, the book by Tom DeLonge and Peter LaVenda, to the Stars Academy guys,
right.
And they say it in the book. I pulled it out of the book itself. It talks about how this is all the sacrifice, the blood sacrifice historically has been to to donate the sacrifice back to the gods. You talked about the Mayans and stuff, and they would the more gory, the more violent the death could be, they would dismember their arms, cut their heads off, pull their heart out of their chest. The gorier and the more violent it was, the better, because the blood had the energy of the sun in it, the Istil, and that energy needed to make it all the way back to the cosmos, to the alien gods, you know, which the ancient aliens show and the ancient astronaut theory says that all these gods they were talking about, they were really alien visitors, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're going with this. And like I said, they've been doing this for a long, long time, and it's only relatively recently that we decided, oh, we should stop murdering babies for these alien gods. Well, they're going to try to reinstill this, and it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be, oh, hey, here's some videos, and look at these UFOs, and we don't know what they are. And then it's going to be, oh, here's some UFO artifact. We don't know what it is. Clearly, there's intelligent life out there. And then it's, meanwhile, the whole time, they're destroying Christianity, which is the you know, Jack Parsons and Crowley's greatest fantasies. And these were guys that were, by the way, channeling aliens and doing all this occult stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I'm a Christian, but like I'm the first to tell you, like, a lot of Christians bug me. So like I get both sides of this coin. I grew up in a sort of Protestant type church, and I hated every minute of it. I couldn't wait to get out of there. When my mom said when I was 16, I didn't have to go anymore. And the day I turned 16, done, I'm out.
Yeah.
And then I sort of, I avoided the church for a while, and then I became an Orthodox Christian. But I'm the first one to be like, I don't like these Bible thumper types. Why does everything have to be a Christian perspective? But right. The truth of the matter is, after all these years of research, I've come back around, and now I'm like, I guess all these crazy Christian types are right. To go on a previous point we discussed, there's a real corny pastor, and he did you can find most of them on YouTube. It's called They Sold Their Soul for Rock and Roll. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen these.
I haven't seen it. No.
Oh, they're actually fantastic. The guy is cornier than hell. He's like every youth pastor you could ever confront. They don't seem like normal people, but like everything they say, they, you know, they pull out all this evidence of like rock stars worshiping the devil, basically. Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff is a stretch, but like it's got a lot of great content and a lot of great info on there.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, they have a whole series of different videos. They got videos on Aleister Crowley, and it's actually like decent research, but not everything is 100% accurate. So take that with a grain of salt. And you got to sit through a lot of, well, you know, Jesus Christ loves you, and you should read this passage here, and like you got, you know, which isn't for everyone. I get that,
right? You talk about like how they're pulling in all of these, you know, these aliens or these spirits, these, you know, something from another realm. And that's not limited to just being in the music industry, because what we're starting to see is like with quantum computing, D-Wave, as an example, the company D-Wave, started by Jordy Rose. Jordy Rose has talked about how they were using D-Wave's quantum computing power, and this is a computer that is calculates at rates that are far exceed typical computers. And he was talking about how that what they were doing with it was they were going into additional dimensions, other dimensions, and pulling back information from that dimension to our dimension in order to use it. And it's like, could you elaborate on that a little bit more? Because like, what does that mean? Is somebody in another dimension giving you information, or is it just information that you can just readily just go out there and grab as much as you want? Is there an agenda? Is there a reason? So it's like, this is transcending typical religion. It's transcending Hollywood / entertainment, and it's now getting into the tech world. We're starting to see like a blending of this almost. So I wonder how much of Burning Man has this sort of darkness to it. You know, you've got Burning Man to me is a combination of like Silicon Valley tech people and Hollywood artists and you know, some, you know, sort of semi-anarchist communities kind of coming together And there's a lot, there seems to be a lot of symbolism there with the creation of this big person, and then they burn it to the ground. And I don't know, it just seems like there might be a little bit of witchcraft going on with Burning Man.
Absolutely. That's, you know, based on the Wicker Man sort of pagan rituals and of the past. And it's how, that's why it was started by, you know, the guy started it and out near San Francisco or something before they moved it into Nevada. And, you know, like, just to put it in perspective, like, I've actually always wanted to go to Burning Man. And I talked to someone just a couple of years ago, and they were like, hey, we go out there every year if you want to go with us. And like, I'm going to do it sometime here.
I mean, I like acid as much as the next guy. So I mean, I definitely would be interested in going and doing it. But only recently have I sort of thought to myself, there might be a little more to this.
Yeah,
there might be a little bit like, it might be a party, and it might be like, you know, peace and love and all that stuff. And we all take our Winnebagos out there and we have this big, big meeting. But like anything, that's surface level, right? Then above, there might be power in that ritual that they, of the burning of the man and where everybody gets together. And of course, you know, I mean, 95% of the people are just there to party and do all of that. But there's got to be a reason for it. There's got to be a reason it's this big. It's allowed to continue. It's allowed to be sort of this free form space where, you know, it doesn't get busted up. They're allowed to do it. So what is the purpose? And maybe the purpose is that it's a energy harvesting, or it's some sort of mass ritual or something like that.
Yeah, most definitely. And they, you know, they used to sacrifice people inside that Wicker Man back in the day. Now they sort of do it a different way. They have the Wicker Man that they do every year, and then, or the Burning Man, excuse me. Then they have the name escapes me, some kind of temple they build every year where people take something of personal value and then they light that on fire. And it's similar to the cremation of care ceremony at the Bohemian Grove.
Right.
And here's my thing, and this is my dilemma, my problems I face, is that I'm drawn to a lot of this sort of dark occultic stuff. I have been my whole life. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have this weird sort of foot in both realms, where I can see that I think they are using energy and devoting it towards some kind of pagan fantasy thing. But like, at the same time, that's it's enjoyable to me. Same with my music that I listen to, my movies that I watch. Like I watched some pretty evil stuff, these horror movies, like they're just so wicked. And I don't know, like it's massively entertaining to me. Not like I enjoy watching people get killed. Like that upsets me. I'm a huge like animal rights kind of guy, even like that's how kind of weird I am about stuff. So like,
have you ever seen Pan's Labyrinth?
I haven't. I need to.
Oh man, it's a trippy movie, man. It's got some darkness to it. Oh
yeah, I remember it had that guy with the eyeballs or whatever, right? He was holding eyeballs or something.
It's a trippy movie. And some of these things I wonder about, you know, like I you know, like a good horror movie or whatever, but it feels like sometimes there are, you know, sometimes there's two messages they're sending. There's the box office message, which is, hey, come out and see our movie, and it's about this or that, and you know, and if you dig, you know, also everybody come on and watch it if you're into, you know, hidden dark symbolism. And I think they sometimes put that in there as a like Easter eggs for people to geek out and find, you know, to find these little hidden jewels in there. And I don't know why, and Hollywood is fantastic at that, at painting a picture and making it seem one way, but just under the surface, you find that there's more to it. Like when we started this talking about Disney and, you know, Pinocchio and all that. And I don't know, people have been seeing this recently floating around the internet, like people that have been taking pictures of the Pinocchio story, the book, you know, and it's like, well, you know, if you want to go to the island of children, you know, the island of kids where they grow, you know, where you have to go there by yourself and you become a man. And then this guy says, well, I pay good money for little boys and things like that. And you're like, oh, it's Pinocchio. And then you're like, hang on a second. Are they talking about something much different here? Are they talking about the island of little boys where this sketchy guy says, I pay extra for little boys. And what is the story of Pinocchio? And is there a ton of symbolism? So it's like on the surface level, it's like, don't tell lies. You know, Pinocchio's about don't tell lies. Then it's like, oh, well, hang on a second. There's a little bit more. There's a child trafficking component to Pinocchio.
Isn't the handler's name Geppetto?
You have to ruin my, you know, these books. But it seems like there's a second message being sent, like an encoded or hidden message for those that have the eyes to see it.
Yeah, isn't Geppetto the name of the handler in that mm-hmm. story? Like Petto is right there in his name.
Sounds kind of like Geppetto file.
The Petto. Anyways, there's the exoteric and then there's the esoteric. And the exoteric is people stay in that mode forever and think that we're all crazy conspiracy nuts. But then there's the esoteric, which is the hidden, baked in doctrine. And I know from personal experience, because like I said, I grew up, the gorier, the more explicit, the better. It was my whole life since I was a young child. And the truth is they do that esoteric stuff and it draws people in as it drew me in. And, I wasn't doing anything crazy, but I was like ghost hunting and stuff. Like I didn't see the danger in it. I was just like, oh, this is cool, man. Like we're talking to spirits and stuff. And then I had some real life manifestations of that happen to me. Nothing too wild, but like weird things happening at my home. And, what do you call it? The name escapes me, an intercom system. And like, it was going off and telling people that, hey, come downstairs. And there's no one down there. Who's setting this thing off? There was these like scratch marks all over the house. We just painted it and it was scratch mark. I mean, just crazy stuff. And we were communicating with my girlfriend's deceased grandfather. I mean, like wacky stuff. And I didn't think much of it. I was like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I've been groomed to sort of embrace this darkness that's in the esoteric parts of these films. And it's sort of grooming people to embrace some of these darker ideas, I think. Yeah. And because like I said, entertainment is very influential. The music, the movies we watch, it's you are what you eat on a certain level. Yeah. And my hypocritical message is like, you don't have to give all that up. And this is just me being a crappy person overall, is you don't have to give up if you enjoy these things, because I don't give it up. I still listen and consume all this stuff. You just have to understand and be aware, because awareness is sometimes enough to keep you from being consumed by it and sort of embracing some of these darker elements. It's dangerous. I mean, like if you're really, you know, concerned or upset about this kind of stuff, I would argue that it's dangerous and you can sort of get possessed by these things on some level and not think about its influence on you. But there is the esoteric and then there's the exoteric, and I'd say 95% of the population is stuck on the exoteric.
Yeah. Well, that, like you said, knowing that it's a part of it and having the awareness of it allows you the flexibility to sort of toe that line where you make sure you stay in the realm of, this is just entertainment for me. I'm watching these horror movies and things like that because I like the entertainment part of it. I acknowledge that there can be a darker side, but because I'm aware of it, I can sidestep that. A lot of people aren't aware of it. They fall right into it. You see that, you think, oh, well, that stuff won't like take over somebody's life. But I mean, over the last couple of years, we saw Slender Man started to creep into the internet, and kids were starting to take that very seriously and things like that. So there's, we can't underestimate the fact that, television is hypnotic. The way they have the science behind television and the waves are hypnotic. You've had Steve Jobs and I think Bill Gates both talk about how they wouldn't let their young kids around tablet devices and things like that too early on because they didn't think that was good for them. So they would probably know. So there's a lot of ways that we get bombarded subconsciously with these sorts of, Hollywood does a nice job overtly of, putting this out there in film, but then also there is a, subconscious, which is like, as we're watching TV, it throws our brains into different wave patterns where we're more like susceptible to being influenced. And so, of course, television, the CIA knows that that's one of the best mediums for mind control. It sounds bad when you say mind control, but that's really what they're trying to do, is change the perception of this. And where recently I've seen this, and I know you have too, is that they've started to enlist celebrities to push the coronavirus situation. They have Tom Hanks saying he's got it. You have Ellen doing these unusual things in lockdown. We talked about Madonna in the bathtub. There are a lot of these celebrities that are known to be in the in crowd, and we can define that however you want, which could be that they're just big stars, but also could be that they're compromised stars, that all seem to have been told or feel some sort of real importance about pushing this, about making sure that everybody is on the same page about that. And that, to me, sent up huge red flags. When they have to have celebrities to sell it, I don't know about you, but if there's the Black Plague that killed, you know, a third of Europe, it doesn't need PR. It doesn't need celebrity endorsements. You fucking know that that's killing people. But lately, with the coronavirus situation, it seems to me like they weren't getting the sort of buy-in that maybe they were hoping, and they enlisted the help of celebrities to start talking about it. It felt like an advertisement to me. And these guys like Tom Hanks and everybody out there talking about, now I could be totally off base with this, could be fully legit that they have it or whatever, but it seemed like a lot of fuckery to me, coming from Hollywood. And I'm now a lot more sensitive to that. When I see it, I'm now starting to like analyze, why are you saying this? Why are you doing this? What's the meaning behind this? Did these celebrity people pushing coronavirus really, did that set off any alarm bells for you, or am I out of my fucking mind?
We're all out of our mind on some level.
I mean, I guess we all are on some level. Yeah.
So when it kicked off, so I, again, another prime example of how I am so far embedded in the rational world that I think the truthers kind of go crazy sometimes. When COVID kicked off, I was one of the first to be like, you know, pandemics happen sometimes. Like, this is a virus. Like, yeah. Viruses exist. Viruses happen. Like, I'm not so far off the conspiracy end that I'm like, nope, doesn't exist. It's right. Fake. And all this is made up. Because when it first kicked off, I was watching all the sort of case numbers, and they all sort of followed the same model where it took a couple of weeks to get up to here, and then it lasted, you know, a month, then it started coming down. And I thought, I mean, that's a pretty massive coordination to get every single government across the country to report the right amount. Not that it's impossible, but I was very skeptical, and I thought, I think this is a legit virus, and I don't know if I buy this conspiracy stuff. But then on my Twitter, I was posting right off the back in, I don't know, March, I guess is what it was, about how crazy it was that all these celebrities were getting coronavirus and COVID, you know? And I made a joke, and I was like, you know, a celebrity is a million times more likely to get COVID than a normal person, you know?
Right.
Because it just kept happening. Tom Hanks and all the, like, the whole Utah Jazz. And if people forget, well, back in March, I had traveled the first week of March. And when I traveled, I was concerned that they were going to shut flights down. Because this thing was just popping off in America. Yep. They weren't mandating masks. And I remember researching it furiously, like, should I wear a mask or not? Because at the time they were like, no, you shouldn't wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. Right. And I was like, but I feel like I should wear a mask. Like, I'm a little nervous about this. And sure enough, some lady on my plane was coughing 2 hours in front of me. And everyone was looking at her like, bitch, you better shut your face, you know? And it was a whole thing. And everyone was real panicked. And then, you know, I get back in, and 2 days after I get back home, we're looking at, I don't know, March 12th or something-ish, I got sick, and I had all these symptoms. It felt like the flu, and I was, like, bugging. I was like, dude, I mean, this is early when everyone was freaking out.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to get tested. Something's going on here. And I called, and, you know, President was on TV. Oh, if you want a test, you can get a test. Well, I'm here to tell you that wasn't the truth.
because I was trying like hell to get a test. I was freaking out. And they wouldn't give me a test. They said, I don't know what to tell you. We don't have a test for you. And meanwhile, Tom Hanks has got COVID. The Utah Jazz has COVID. Yeah. I'm like, how did these guys get tests? If I can't get a test, how did they get a test? You know, so either A, they were stockpiling tests for the elite, or B, this was all a coordinated hoax. Mm-hmm. And the only celebrity that I've seen that seemed to show these symptoms is the guy from Hamilton that died. I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but he battled it for months, as the story goes, and apparently he died from it. But other than that, it's like, here's Tom Hanks and he's in Australia or something, quarantined, having a good old time. Mm-hmm. And you're right. There's a sales pitch to this. There's what's his name? Idris Elba. I don't know.
He had it. Right.
Yep. He had it. And then in his video, it's like him and his wife standing there, wife right behind him. And he's like, hey, everybody, I got COVID. I'm isolating. I'm like, your wife's 2 feet
right
behind
there.
You're not isolating. What are you talking about, dude?
Yeah.
And like, and the list goes on and on. All these celebrities had it. And
Boris Johnson had it in the UK. He's like, oh, I've got it. I'm asymptomatic, but I'm going to quarantine.
Yeah.
And the asymptomatic thing always threw me, because it's like, I have it, but I don't have it. Like, I have it, but I feel fine. And you're like, okay, like, I need to see you like kind of on your deathbed, to be honest, before I believe you actually have it. You know?
And it's like, if you are asymptomatic and you don't have it, why are you getting a test? Why? I mean, like, that test looks horrific from what I hear.
Yeah.
But like,
why did you do that?
Drove you to take the test exactly then?
Exactly. Yeah. It didn't seem quite as organic as I would have expected a worldwide pandemic to be. I frankly would have, not that I wanted this, but I would have expected, you know, what we saw in China, people falling over and dying on the sidewalks and things like that. I mean, we watched all the documentaries of World War II. We saw how it was. There are dead people in the streets, dead people on the sidewalks. I fully was anticipating, well, if it's going to be this bad, then we're going to see that. I didn't see any of that. And I'm glad I did. I don't want to, but it just didn't seem like it was matching up. And then things start to drop off and, you know, in May and June. And then all of a sudden, as everything seems to be sort of tailing off and stores are opening up again, now it's mask up. Everybody has to have a mask on, which to me, I felt like, well, this is like a, we've got an invisible virus that you can't see. We're all trying to avoid it, but we can't see it. And we don't have dead bodies stacked everywhere. How can we make everyone afraid of it? Oh, okay. Everybody put the mask on. And then that is a visual representation everywhere you go that we're still in this thing, that we still have to be fearful. And I'm starting to, and I'm going, okay, well, this is a psychological operation on some level for sure. But then I start to read like, oh, well, everything will be opened in November, middle of November. I'm like, middle of November, huh? Middle of November, you say, with flu season coming up, middle of November. Would it have happened to have anything to do with an election? I mean, that seemed like a pretty arbitrary date for them. Not the end of November, the middle of November is when everything is going, the schools are going to go back. I'm like, that sounds like an agenda. That sounds like bullshit to me. So combining that with the Tom Hanks and all this, the celebrity push and Fauci contradicting himself, and is this not like a gigantic ritual?
Right. And this has all the red flags of like 9/11. And
yeah, same people too. There's a lot of the overlap with these simulations bringing them up, you know.
And here's my thing is like, I'm still, it's kind of like the Epstein thing. You know, I'm like, I see that this is for sure being used as a psyop, for sure. 100% this is being used as a psyop. Yep. The timing is so suspect. Everything about it is so sketchy. But on the other hand, I'm also kind of like, yeah, I believe that a virus could have leaked out of this Chinese bio lab where they were doing gain of function testing that frickin' Fauci was all about, and then they shut it down because it was too dangerous, and then they reopened it just right before this thing kicked out. So like, part of me believes this is a real virus, and like, I'm trying to watch out for myself. Like, you know, I hear about long-term lung damage, and I got a CrossFit career to tend to here, and you know, No, I'm not. But like, I really worry about catching it because I don't want this long term lung thing. If that's true, I mean, but that aside, it's a psyop for sure, regardless of whether this is a real virus or not, regardless of whether masks help or not. And I've kind of lived in this gray zone of like, how much do I buy into it? And I live in Utah, and we have a very skewed perspective of this. In fact, just yesterday I was driving and I still go work out. I still do CrossFit. We're fist bumping. Like, it's like, it doesn't exist in my world. Yeah. I drive by the park and there's 15 people playing basketball. And I was like, dude, it's like, it doesn't exist in my world besides on the news. And I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if that's the truth. And you're right. Maybe the masks are like the visual cue of like, hey, everyone, we need to keep being scared. Or if this is legitimate. I mean, the case numbers. And you mentioned the body stacking up. And I remember watching the news in March, and Italy and Spain had an ice rink full of dead bodies. And in New York City here, they're trucking in refrigerator trucks, and they're going to take an island and stack all the bodies in the island because there's not enough room. Mm-hmm. And like, the cases were like, you know, this tiny chunk back then. And now in July, they're way up here, four times as much as they were back then. What happened to all this dead bodies stacking up talk? You know,
it makes me think of, and I'm stuck on this because I keep mentioning it, but I mention it because it's such an obscure thing that most people don't know about it, but it's really important, is that Obama passed the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, which legalized propaganda inside the United States to be used on Americans. And I would suggest that they don't take that extraordinary step of legalizing it unless they intend to actually use it on us. So about the time that kicked off, we had massive amounts of school shootings and things like that, which have questionable ties to a lot of things. But I think...
Easy, Charlie. Don't say the words.
I'm not saying it.
Don't say the S and the H word.
I don't want my channel to go away, but you know, there's some questions. And so, and it's not to say that before the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, they weren't lying to us, because of course we know they were, but they made it legal because they intended to use it. And so whenever we start to hear statistics about deaths, and we start to hear about, you know, ice skating rinks filled with dead bodies and refrigerator trucks and all that stuff, I just always have to remember that they made it legal to lie to us about things like this. Now, they don't have to identify what part of the story on the nightly news is real and what part of it is the propaganda. So it all gets mixed together. But it seems to me like a lot of the things that we are hearing on the nightly news have, you know, are statistics that we can't prove. I mean, I can't go out there and double check this. Talking about events that happen in places where I'm not there, I can't check it myself. So there's a lot of, you know, the stats that we get, the contradictions that we get. It seems to me like we also have to remember that there is the ability, you know, part, we have to consider that part of this is propaganda. And what is the, how much of it is the whole thing propaganda? Are the statistics propaganda? Is it that we're burying all these people in unmarked graves and everything? Is that the propaganda? Because we know they use it. We know that the media lies about, you know, hey, this is Syria. And you're like, no, it's not. It's Kentucky. It's a gun range where they're doing a big thing. Like, you guys are propagandists. You're caught lying constantly. So... but we're supposed to believe you with this virus? And then it's like, hey, well, we've brought in Ellen to talk to you about the virus. It's like, because why? Because she's a fucking doctor? Like, what are we doing? Like, what's that? So it just, the whole thing seems a little fishy. And God forbid you bring this up to somebody that is fully invested in the mainstream narrative. They look at you like you're crazy, and it's really a shame that that we're at this point. But I think that part of this is the role that Hollywood / entertainment industry has on us. And like you said, we've been talking about, you know, rituals and magic and spells and all these things that the casual observer just goes, meh, I'm not into that. It doesn't mean anything to me, therefore it doesn't matter to anybody. But that's actually not the case. And it seems like it does matter to these people, and that they are following some sort of I don't know if it's an instruction manual or ritual, a form of ritual where they do things in a particular way. They feel an obligation to sell it. I don't know if these people that are Hollywood celebrities have been promised something. I don't know if they have been threatened where they're saying you have to do it, that their careers will go away. But it seems like that these people have a vested interest in selling you this narrative, and not just the celebrities, but also the politician celebrities, Gavin Newsom and the Andrew Cuomo and all these guys that are saying masks. It's been all about that recently. And it just seems to me like it's a coordinated effort. And as you and I both know, the media is very devious. You know, they are not exactly looking out for our best interests. So when I see coordination between Hollywood, the scientific community, and the media, boy, man, I get really suspicious. I get really suspicious that they're up to no good. I mean, do you get the same vibe from this or from them?
Yeah, you should. You should pucker up for sure, man. And these celebrities, I don't know, but I would assume that when you reach that level of fame, success, money, that you've made some arrangements, some deals that you can't really back out of, and they could bring you down in a second. All they got to do is call TMZ and say, "Hey, Tom Hanks allegedly was messing with this, whatever." And mm-hmm. I'm sure that sort of threat system exists on some level. I mean, that's a mighty big carrot to dangle in front of someone to be like, "Hey, you know," I mean, you know, and I'm not above that either. Like, if Hollywood came at me and was like, "Hey, you know what? We're going to give you enough money. You can quit your day job. You don't have to podcast anymore. You just got to star in this movie. And, life will be great. You'll be famous. You'll be rich. You can live in LA where it's warm all year round." I'd be like, sign me up, man.
Let's turn that down. They know that. They've got something that people want. They've got whatever you want. What do you want? You want money? You got money. You want fame? We got fame. You want hot chicks? We got that. You want little boys? We got that too. You know, I mean, what do you want? You know, it's a dirty place. Well, hey, tell everyone where they can find your work, because I know this is the tip of the iceberg. It's unfair to only have you on for like an hour and 15 minutes because it doesn't do these topics justice. But where can people get more of your stuff?
Yeah, man, we got to hook up again. We'll go deeper. So I'm all over the place. IlluminatiWatcher.com is the website. My Instagram is at Isaac Weishaupt, I post all kinds of, that's kind of my new place where I post a lot of photos and videos of these celebrities and weird things in movies, because I used to put them on my website and then on my YouTube channel. I got shadow banned from all of that. So now my website practically doesn't exist on Google, but ironically enough, you go to DuckDuckGo or Bing and search those terms, I show up. Anyway, So you can follow me on the Instagram. That's where I put all my interesting stuff. And then I've got, of course, my own podcast, Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture with Isaac Weishaupt. That's me, my pseudonym, by the way. I know half the audience is like, "Oh, this guy's in the Illuminati." No, it's just a stupid pseudonym. I wish I could take it back, but I can't. Then what else do I got? I got books. I got all kinds of books on Amazon, Audible, narrated. I got like 7 or 8 of them. The Dark Path is probably my most popular, where it explains everything we've been talking about. Cool. If you read that book, it explains the whole thing from start to finish. I'm wrapping up my first of 2 alien books. So if you,
I'm into that. Yeah, I'm into that, man. I'm into the alien. I don't know enough, but I find it fascinating. So I'm going to check that out.
It's the big agenda. It's happening. And I'm feverishly typing this thing up because I've been talking about it for about a year. And then little did I know that the COVID thing would kick off, and now we're getting disclosure, and I'm like, oh, I got to drop this thing now.
Yeah.
So I'm feverishly writing this book. So if people want to stay in tune with me, I've got an email newsletter on my website on the Start Here tab. Sign up for my email. That's just mine. I pay for it. I don't sell that to nobody. That's my only link to civilization that they can't take from me, because they can take it all away at any time.
Yeah, those are important. The people that have the deep email list of people that have signed up at their websites, those are the people that are going to be able to connect with their fans when the deplatforming happens. And it's been slow, but it's a steady process. They'll get rid of all of us at some point because they don't like what we have to say. They don't appreciate us, exposing their plan and they would prefer that we didn't talk about this. Well, hey man, thanks for coming on. I certainly do appreciate it. And people that like the show, make sure you share it. Like we just said, we're not going to get any help from the algorithms. So do what we can. Thanks, Isaac, for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.